Hi, everybody. I'm Squire Joseph.
Hey, I'm Emo Goth Jason.
Hi, I'm Resurrection Stone.
And we represent the Guild Knights of the Earl of March. And you're listening to Wowcast.
Wowcast? What the?
Trust you Canadians to get something like this wrong?
It's Guildcast.
All right, right, right. You're listening to Guildcast, the best Guild Wars podcast ever.
It's the only one we know.
Quiet, you!
Okay, yeah. And if you have time in between Guildcast episodes, please come by and check out our podcast called Rated T, which has a Facebook group. So, I guess that's it. Huh? I think we're done here. Psst. By the way, I think I speak for all of Guillaume when I say Lady Sanea has the hottest voice on the show. No offense, Sean. Anyway, enjoy Wowcast.
Guildcast.
Guildcast. Damn it! Damn it! Oh, why do we always end
it?
Every day is so hard. When it breaks us apart.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this 81st episode of Guildcast for September 9th, 2007. I'm your host, Sean. On today's show, I'm going to talk a little bit about the secondary profession. I also have a segment from Big Daddy Goose and one from Lady Sanea that I will be playing a little bit later. Plus, there is a ton of news to talk about, including my views on Eye of the North so far. I know you're all just dying to hear that, or maybe not. Well, the people who asked to be mentioned this time around include Oxymoronic Healer of the Jade Dragons of the Mists, Raphael Kickbutt and his friend Chris, St. Josh, and Argos of Ascalon. So, where do I begin? Well, let's get some of the other stuff out of the way first before I get into my thoughts on Gwen. I have a feeling that this is going to be a pretty long show. So first let me mention something about the Guildcast Wiki. I've talked about it before, but not really too much recently. For those of you who don't know, the Guildcast Wiki is a website that's set up where listeners can contribute their own show notes about the podcast or the contributors or the music or everything to do with Guildcast. This even includes some word-for-word transcripts on a few of the episodes. It's really helpful when you're trying to remember which show had which topic or what contributor or song or whatever. Well, here's the thing. Lately, the wiki has become a one-man show starring Hallway Giant. He maintains the site, he writes the show notes, and he spends much of his time battling spammers, which is no fun at all. So, if you go check out the site, which, by the way, is at www.guildcast.com/wiki, you'll see the wonderful work that he does. It's pretty amazing how organized and sharp everything looks. But, you know, he can't do this alone. He really needs help. So, we have a few choices here, which I put them up in a poll in the forums, and I'll put a link to that post in today's show notes so you all can go on there and vote on it. Basically, what it is we want to know if we should A, keep the wiki like it is, but this can only happen if we get more contributors to help with show notes and battling the spammers. Or B, lock down the wiki so no one can contribute at all, except for me and Hallway Giant and a few other of the sysops on there. Now, this will eliminate the spammers, but the site will act as kind of like a shrine of sorts to the past work. So basically, it will remain up, but not really updated, and it won't really... It kind of defeats the purpose of a wiki, you know, because people can't go on there and enter their own notes. But it would remain up, is basically this big thing there with B. Or choice C is eliminate the wiki altogether. Now, this is only if you don't really see a need for it all. So go ahead and head over to the Guildcast forums, or to the show notes for today, where the link is to that post. And let us know what you think of this issue. Next, we have an event that I wanted to spread the word about a little bit, and it's called the Great Southern Char Roast. And it'll be on October 13th, 2007. It's hosted by the Guild Prime Assembly. So what it is, basically, is it'll be like a giant cookout or barbecue or whatever you want to call it. They're going to have hot dogs and hamburgers and all the southern food goodness that you know. And it's going to be at a giant state park called Falls Lake State Recreational Park in Wake Forest, North Carolina. There's a website for this event set up at www.guildserv.com/GSCR. And again, I'll put a link to that in today's show notes so that, you know, the people who may be in the area, you know, in the American South can go check that out. It's all free. If you register before October 6th, it's free. After that, it's only like a dollar or something. And if you show up there and you want to go and you're not registered, I think it's $3. It's really nothing. I mean, these guys are putting this together out of their own pockets. You know, they're doing it mainly, they're, you know, Guild Wars players, they're Guildcast listeners, and they're doing this to get people together in the area and to meet other Guild Wars players, you know. And it's basically like a big meet and greet, you know, and I think it's a wonderful idea. It sounds like a really great time, and I'm going to see if I can go since it's only a few hours away from me. You know, that's still up in the air, but they're going to have like activities with prizes. And one of the prizes actually is going to be a CD compilation of the first year of Guildcast episodes. So that's kind of cool. And speaking of contests and prizes, last week I had a little contest in the Guildcast forums where I gave away two Grawl mini pet codes that were given to me by Gail Gray. I hear those things are extremely rare. I'm not positive. I heard there's only like 300 of them in existence or something like that. But I it might just be a rumor. And, you know, I like to do things like that every once in a while just for my listeners who are regulars on the forums, you know, because I think the people who go on the forums, not that there's any kind of competition or anything or, you know, any kind of ladder of leetness with the listeners, but I think the people who go on the forums, they participate a little bit more than just the regular listeners. And that's not, every podcast I listen to, I don't go on any of their forums. So, you know, my hat's off to the people who regularly attend the forums. So, anyway, I wanted to say congratulations to Captain Jordan and Frizz, who are the two who correctly guessed the bosses from the hints that I had in a few poems that I wrote for this contest. What they had to do is they had to not only decipher my silly little poems to figure out who the bosses were, there's two for each chapter, but also they had to defeat the boss and take a screenshot of themselves next to the dead boss. It was really a pretty intense contest that relied on wit, skill, and of course a little luck. Hopefully I can do more contests like that in the future, because I think it was really fun, at least for me writing those poems. It was a lot of fun. Alright, so what else? Well, you remember Sonia Brock? I mentioned her podcast a few months ago. She's the older woman who plays Guild Wars, and she talks about it on her podcast every once in a while. The whole podcast isn't about Guild Wars, but she talks about it every once in a while. Well, her latest episode, number 63, is all about her virtual life, and namely that on Guild Wars. It's a pretty interesting listen, so I think you should at least check it out if you want to just sit back and listen to a wonderful storyteller. What else? Oh, yeah, I also wanted to mention the fact that I got my guild back. I think a few shows ago I mentioned how I left the guild I started, which is Guildcast Listeners United. And the reason I did that was to kind of spread my wings a bit. Well, through some interesting circumstances, I'm actually now the guild leader again. The rules have changed a bit while I was gone, but I think I'm going to keep those in place because I think Lysander did a great job setting those up. I won't go over them here because I'm not a big fan of taking up too much of the podcast time with guild stuff, but you can go check out the rules at guildcast.com/guilds. That's plural, guilds. And then read through the rules if you're interested in applying for the guild. One thing, though, that I did want to mention really quickly is the inactivity rule. There was a new rule set up by Lysander where it would kick inactive members when they reached 1 month of inactivity time in the game. I'm going to actually uphold that rule so that we can stay an active guild, but I'm giving those people who currently have 1 month of inactivity time, I'm going to give them one more week to come into the game and stay in the guild before I start kicking them out, you know, next week. Wow, I didn't realize I had so much to talk about here, but okay, I also wanted to talk about PAX that I attended last week in Seattle, Washington. Now, PAX, of course, is the Penny Arcade Expo, which was just a blast. I mentioned it on show number 80, just, you know, before I went, I mentioned that I was going. Well, they estimated, actually, that there were around 40,000 people who attended that, which is supposedly double last year's numbers from what I hear. And as I mentioned on the last episode, the whole reason I went was because I won that Superfan contest, which got me into an early after party to meet up with the good folks at ArenaNet in kind of a more personal setting. So here's my take on the whole thing. First off, like I said, PAX rocked. It was an amazing event. It was put together very well by the organizers, I think. And I think one of the big things that really stood out in my mind as far as the organization of the event itself is, instead of having a security force, I guess you could say, of maybe like security guards, you know, who are working overtime or you know, rent-a-cops here and there, it was basically the people who did the security were called enforcers, and they had these black t-shirts on that said enforcers on the back. They were actually fans. There were other fans who agreed to do this. There weren't, you know, kind of like farmed out help to come in there, and people who don't understand, you know, the culture of gaming and things like that, to come in there and try to police the whole situation, because I think it probably could have got ugly. I think they did a great job by having these enforcer people act as volunteers. I guess they were volunteers. I'm not positive on that. But anyway, the way it was set up, there were gaming areas, there were panels with some pretty big name speakers, there were tournaments, live bands, booths galore, and then they had all the free swag you could fit in your little plastic bag that they handed out at the beginning. I went with my friend Sarah, and we only went for the one day, which was Saturday, because we also wanted to do some touristy things around Seattle itself. But I think Saturday was enough, actually. I felt we really didn't get to see too much of the booth area, because we were kind of rushing through, you know, they had a schedule, especially with the panels and everything. But what we went to see was, there was the History of Guild Wars panel, and then there was the About ArenaNet panel, which were both absolutely amazing. It was really fun just sitting there listening to the game creators tell their stories on things like how the Char evolved or why the Ellie primeval armor looks the way it does. It was just really an amazing experience for someone like me who just thrives on this kind of stuff. You know, I love the behind the scenes and the history and all that stuff. I really love that. So anyway, during this time, I got to meet up with Gail Gray, and I talked with her a little bit. You know, we had a little bit of chat time, and that's when she gave me these Grawl mini pet coats for prizes. I also got some signed artwork by two artists who are actually two of my favorite. There's Sean Sharp, which, you know, he has the same first name as me. I mean, you know, how awesome is that? And then there's Jamie Jones. Now, I once emailed Jamie a long time ago telling him that, you know, I just think he's amazing, and I'm just a fan of his, even separate from the game itself. Just his artwork is amazing. So, and he actually emailed me back, and he seems like a really nice person. So when I was actually able to meet him, that was just amazing. And getting his autograph too on one of his artwork, a print of one of his prints. I think the only thing that this nervous fan could say was, "Dude, I love your work," or something like that. I don't know. I'm a total dork. Also during this time, I got to meet Brant Fitzgerald, who will always have kind of a special place in my heart as the first ArenaNet employee to ever contact me. He was also the first to sign up for my forums. He's a great guy. I mean, he has a sense of humor like mine. He's kind of on the sick and twisted side. I saw him several more times throughout the night, and each time he'd just come up to me and we'd chat like we were old friends or something. And, you know, not to sound too sappy or anything, but these were probably my favorite times of the entire trip. He really made it a special time just to be able to come up to me and recognize me and be like, "Hey, Sean," you know, and just kind of chat. And even like when I first introduced myself to him, I'm like, "Hey, are you Brant Fitzgerald?" And he's like, "Why, yes, I am." And then I said, "Hey, I'm Sean from Guildcast, you know, and we've talked a little bit." And he was like, "Oh yeah, hey, I thought I recognized your voice." And I'm like, "Recognize my voice? I don't know." I was still a little starstruck. So anyway, the after party. The whole reason for coming, whatever thousands of miles I flew, was for this after party. It was held at GameWorks, which is right across the street from the convention center where PAX was held. We stood in line a little while before the doors opened, and this is another one of those times when Brant just walked up to me and he's like, "Hey, Sean, you got to tell the listeners that, you know, even ArenaNet employees have to stand out here and wait in line like the rest of you. So once we got into the place, it was pretty intense. There were two floors of arcade games with everything imaginable. I mean, anything you can think of. There was also a restaurant and a bar, and we got two free drinks if you're over 21, and then we got some free food, which I actually didn't eat because we had just pigged out at an amazing Italian restaurant about 30 minutes before that. And speaking of that, I want to mention as kind of a side note that all of you listeners that I met out there, including the ones who took me out to dinner, you guys rock. I can't thank you enough for all that. That was really, really cool of you. And Junkmaster, Junkmaster's hilarious when he's drunk or sober. I just want to throw that in there. Anyway, yeah, GameWorks was really cool. It was a lot of fun just walking around and seeing the ArenaNet employees just, you know, playing these games with regular people, you know, with other fans of the game that they create. They're just sitting there playing games with them. And it's like, ooh, look, there's James Finney playing a fighting game. Holy crap, that's Jeff Strain over there. And that's Mike O'Brien walking by. Yeah, I was, like I said, I was starstruck. And, you know, dorky old me didn't even walk up and say hi to any of them. I mean, a few of them I did, but I didn't say hi to Jeff Strain or Mike O'Brien. It was, I didn't want to bother them. Although in retrospect, you think about it and it's like, well, that's why they were there to meet the fans, you know, and I'm standing in the shadows, you know, just going, oh my God. But, Sarah kept telling me to go say hi to him. But yeah, it was just something I'll never forget, that whole experience. And I must say, you know, on a serious note here, that you'd really be hard pressed to find another gaming company out there that has 4 million boxes sold, and they still feel like they can just intermingle with fans like ArenaNet does. It's really amazing. Okay, so before this turns into a 2-hour show where I don't actually give out any useful information, let me just give my impressions on Eye of the North so far. First off, let me give a slight disclaimer and say that I've only actually been able to play a few hours due to my work schedule I wanted to give the game a little bit more playtime before I did this episode, which is one of the reasons why I waited so long to get it out here. But then I figured, you know, I can talk enough about the things that I liked or disliked now, because if I say too much more, it would really be giving away some spoilers, and I want to keep this completely spoiler-free as much as I can. So first, let's go over my favorites. I am so in love with the branched storylines, the whole storyline in general. I love how you can choose which side or which race to help, and you can follow through the quests of theirs while still being able to go back and join another side at any time. The culture of these races is so strong, too. Like, the Norn are kind of the Nordic, Scandinavian-based people, and they have their deep roots in their heritage. This just drew me in right off the bat. It was really amazing. The dwarves were another one that were a lot like this, and I really like the dwarves. But you know, we've played with the dwarves before in Prophecies, and then you know you got Thunderhead Keep, which kind of makes you a little sick of dwarves. But still, I enjoyed the dwarven areas too. I played a little bit through the Asuran lands. They were probably my least favorite race, although they're still great. You know, I don't have anything against them. I think maybe the problem was I just didn't play through their area as much as the others yet. Because the main reason for that, though, is the Char homelands. Once I you know, what I'd do is I'd branch out into different ones, and then I'd kind of go back and forth and play here and there. But when I got into the Char homelands, I couldn't stop. That's where the Vanguards are, and that's where Gwen, she has this, well, I don't think this is giving away any spoilers, but she really hates Char, let's just say, and rightfully so. And it really makes for a nice storyline, I think, and it really draws you in. As far as the atmosphere of the Char lands, it's a lot like playing through Pre-Searing again, or at least across the Northern Wall, but on a much larger, more well-designed scale. Now, as for the cutscenes, I think they are just fantastic. I went back and I watched some factions cutscenes while helping some guildies out after I'd played through Eye of the North and watched, you know, the Eye of the North cutscenes, and holy crap, it's like night and day. I mean, I would recommend, after you play Eye of the North, just skip all factions cutscenes from now on. Many people have complained about the way that you obtain armor in this expansion. You need, like, a certain rank of a certain title to even be eligible for many of the armor or weapons, or all of them, basically, all the good ones. But to do this, you need to kill a certain amount of creatures, or do a certain amount of quests. You can do a repeatable quest over and over again to get the points that you need for these titles also. And it's much like the Sunspear or the Lightbringer ranks of Nightfall. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I welcome this. Sure, it's a form of grinding, and we as Guild Wars players would rather, you know, cut our eyeballs out than succumb to that evil WoW-like practice of grinding. But look, it's a reward for playing the game over a long period of time. I think it's only fair. Plus, they want to keep you in this game for at least another year till Guild Wars 2, right? I don't know, I just don't really see the big deal in it being called a bad thing. But, you know, it's just my opinion. Some other things I love, well, there's the talking NPCs. I think that has a certain charm that's entertaining, at least for the first three or four times. But there's the solo tournaments, which are really hard, and you'll see a lot of people complaining about the difficulty of them. But I think, you know, it'll actually make people think of a good build, or more realistically, look it up on GuildWiki. So now for some things that I don't really like about Eye of the North. There honestly wasn't much, and most of these things are purely aesthetic and kind of nitpicky, like the fact that most of the creatures you fight are reskins, and the pets are pretty much the same, just reskins of others, I guess with the exception of the raven a little bit. But that, you know, that was one of the cool things about factions. The pets were all new and exciting. Also, I'm not overly impressed with any of the new armors. Although that, I really wasn't impressed with any of the Nightfall armors either. I'm not really liking any of the armors since, probably basically since Prophecies. I like a lot of the 15k armors and Prophecies. The factions ones, it looks like they went to a different type of armor where they kind of, they had like outlines of the armor that could be dyed and that was it. And then, you know, Nightfall was a little bit better, I think. Actually, I think Nightfall is a lot better than factions. But now, I don't know. I think it's still, nothing is catching me yet. And again, that's a nitpicky thing. It's just kind of my thing. I love armor. Although, you know, I must give them credit because they have some pretty cool new accessories that they've added, like glasses, or they call them spectacles. And they have special masks that you can get and special crowns, and then they have bandanas. But I guess it's almost crossing the line in The Sims 2 a little bit. Although the gauntlets are pretty cool. I gotta say the gauntlets are really cool. So I guess that's about it though. I'm sure as I progress more through the game, I can talk more about what I like or didn't like. But again, there's only so much more that I can say on the show without really ruining it for the people who don't have it yet. Plus, what I'd like to do is get together and do a Skype show with someone so that we can compare notes on things that we like or dislike the most, and maybe, you know, we can get a couple different opinions in there, and maybe we can maybe argue about it a little bit. So, anyway, on to what the show is actually about, which is secondary professions. So first what I'm going to do is I'm going to play Goose's segment on his Back to the Basics segment on secondaries, which would be, it kind of acts as a good introduction into what secondaries are if you're not familiar. And then I'll go more into depth off of some of the things that he said.
Greetings, guildies. Goose here. After posting a message in the forums recently asking for suggestions on this Back to Basics segment, I was overwhelmed with the number of suggestions I got. I was also surprised to see that none of the suggestions involved the words bite or me. So that was a good thing. A number of people had requested to hear a little bit about secondary professions. So I thought we'd take a little time today just to talk about the basics of a secondary profession. In most role-playing games, when you create a character, your character has a class. In Guild Wars, this is known as a profession. In traditional games, when you create a class, you might be able to gain skills outside that class's area of expertise. For example, in some games, you may be able to create a warrior that knows a few healing skills, or a ranger that knows a little magic. In Guild Wars, you create a character with a primary profession. This is the profession that your character will specialize in. But you can also choose a secondary profession. A secondary profession allows you access to the entire skill list from another profession other than your primary one. Now, the only downside to having a secondary profession is that each profession has attributes, and each profession has a primary attribute. That's an attribute that, as a primary, you can put points into that will give you additional abilities and additional advantages. If you choose that profession as a secondary, you no longer have access to that primary attribute. Let me give you an example. A monk has a primary attribute of divine favor. For every point you put into divine favor, you increase the ability to heal others. If you choose monk as a secondary, for example, if you choose a warrior and then have a monk as a secondary, you no longer have access to the divine favor primary attribute of your monk skills, which means your healing will not be as effective. So every profession can be selected as either a primary or a secondary, but every profession will have a slight disadvantage if it's chosen as a secondary. Why would you want to choose a secondary? Well, it's simple. More skills, more abilities. There are plenty of character builds out there that focus on single profession builds. There are a number of elementalists that's all they use are elementalist skills, and they don't need a secondary profession. Warriors, the same thing. So there's plenty of builds out there. There's plenty of character templates out there that only require a primary profession. However, having a secondary gives you the option of adding additional skills that would normally not be available to you. Is it required that you take a secondary profession? Well, technically, yes, it is. In each of the three campaigns, in Prophecies, Factions, and Nightfall, in order to progress into the storyline, there comes a point in the game where you are required to choose a secondary profession. Failing to choose a secondary profession will not advance the quest and will not advance the storyline, and you'll be stuck. So you're going to have to pick a secondary. But that's okay, because even if you don't use your secondary profession, simply having it does not make your character any less effective. So even if you don't want a secondary, you're going to have to pick one. So it really doesn't matter if you don't want one. So when do you pick a secondary profession? Well, typically it's when you're beginning to level up. It's in your first few levels. In Prophecies, it's in the pre-Syrian area of Ascalon. In Factions, it's when you're on Xingjie Island, when you're still leveling up and just getting the basics of the quests down. As soon as you select a secondary profession in Factions, the Lennox Courtyard Gateway will open up and you'll be able to progress throughout the island and onto the mainland. It's very similar in Ilona. There's a command training area inside of Kamadan, Jewel of Istan, which will give you access to trying different professions. Once again, you can try out different professions before you select, so you can get an idea of how they will complement your primary profession. In all three campaigns, once you select your secondary profession, it's locked in. It's permanent. Until a certain point. Later in the game, on all three continents, it is possible to change your secondary profession. In Prophecies, you must be ascended. Having your character ascended means that that character has achieved a title, a legendary heroic status, by earning the blessings of the gods of Tyria. Once your character has ascended, you'll be able to take quests from a character known as Vani in Drachner's Forge. These quests will allow you to change your secondary profession. However, you must do a quest for each secondary profession you wish to change to. For example, if you're a warrior monk, which means a warrior primary with a monk secondary profession, and you want to change your secondary into a necromancer, you would go to Vani in Drachner's Forge after being ascended and select the necromancer's path. Once you complete that quest, you will be allowed to change your secondary to a necromancer. You'll have to do that for every secondary profession you want to change to. However, in Factions and Nightfall, it's slightly easier. you still need to be ascended, but once you are ascended, selecting a secondary profession is very easy. In factions, becoming ascended actually means taking the status of Wei No Su by completing the mission Nafu Quarter. Once you have achieved the status, you'll be in Sinji's Corner. In Sinji's Corner, you will find a profession changer. Speak with the profession changer and select the profession you wish to change to, and then you pay 500 gold. And it's as simple as that. In Nightfall, it's very similar. In Nightfall, once you open the command post, you'll be able to take a quest called Building the Base Prisoners of War. Once you complete this quest, it will provide your command post with a profession changer. Go into the command post, speak with the profession changer, select your secondary profession, and pay 500 gold. It's that easy. Selecting a secondary profession is a little bit more complicated and tricky. There's many variables and factors to take into account, and there's many different options, many different answers. If you go onto the Guildcast forums, guildcast.com/forums, and post a question in the lounge about what should my secondary profession be, you'll get a number of responses. There's plenty of options out there as to which professions complement which other professions. It really is more up to you which you prefer playing. My recommendation is take the advantage that you get when you're early in the game in pre-seared Ascalon or the Noob or the Islands of Cantha or Alona and experiment with the different secondary professions. Play around with them, try different skills, try different builds, see what you like. Just remember, you can always change your secondary profession later. So, I hope this helps. This has been Big Daddy Goose.
Okay, so now that you have the basics of what a secondary profession is, I want to make one point perfectly clear. This episode is not going to tell you what secondary profession you should pick for your character. Instead, I'm going to give you the facts on what secondaries can do, and from there, mixed with your playing style and your preferences, you can choose what secondary you would like the most. I want to slap every person I see asking in local chat, "Can anyone tell me what secondary I should pick for my warrior?" But then again, I want to slap the person who tells them monk even harder. Your secondary profession is there to aid not only in extra skills you may need for a certain build, but also for the attributes and even weapons that you might want to use. A good example of this last part is with the illusionary tank build. You're a mesmer running around with a sword. Sounds funny, doesn't it? But with illusionary weaponry, which is a mesmer skill, armor of mist and armor of frost, which are both elementalist spells, you make a pretty good tank, and there's no warrior required. So this combination is made possible through the secondary profession. The possibilities are really endless on what you can create combining the literally hundreds of skills from each profession. Okay, well then what's the biggest drawback of the secondary? Well, there's a few, the biggest one being the fact that you can't use the primary attribute of your secondary class. Let's say, as an example, you want to be an elementalist because you like their armor or whatever, but you find out that you love the mesmer's skills more. So you make your secondary mesmer and then you load up on all mesmer skills. Great! You now have this huge pool of energy with the elementalist's primary attribute energy storage. So what could go wrong? Well, mesmer skills tend to take a little bit longer to cast, hence the use of the mesmer's primary attribute, fast casting. Without fast casting, you're stuck with the actual activation times for these spells, which kind of sucks. The other main drawback of doing things this way is the use of runes on armor. So let's stick with this Ellie mesmer scenario still. You want to make a domination mesmer in an Ellie's body with the energy pool of energy storage. Now, how can you make your domination magic attribute higher than 12? Ooh, I got it. A superior domination magic rune, right? You can't put mesmer runes on Ellie armor, so you're stuck at 12. Unless, of course, you use a domination staff with a 20% chance of giving you a 1 to domination magic, which is possible, but it's only a chance. So, As Goose said in his segment, changing your secondaries involves a little bit of a process. In Factions and Nightfall, you simply progress through the storyline and you get the option to change your secondary. Then you can go to a profession changer to pay 500 gold to change each of the other secondary professions. And then later you can go back and change these secondaries back and forth for free. Well, in Prophecies, it's a little bit different. You have side quests that you need to do for each secondary that you'd like to change. Most people who have multiple chapters don't do these quests anymore since it's become simplified with the introduction of Factions in Nightfall. But in the event that you are a sadist, or maybe you only own Prophecies, you can do these fairly simple yet tedious quests one by one. But, you know, the biggest obstacle with this is the fact that these secondary changing quests are only in the Crystal Desert, which is probably, I'd say, more than halfway through the game. So when you choose your secondary way back in pre-Searing Ascalon, you're stuck with it until you reach the desert. In Factions in Nightfall, the option to change comes much, much sooner. Now, take note that in PvP, this is all handled a lot differently. You start out without a secondary, but you can choose one from the skills menu. There's a little drop-down menu, and you choose it for free. You don't have to pay anything, and you can change back and forth anytime you like. Another useful aspect of secondaries is unlocking skills for your account. Let's say you're not the type who likes to have one of every character in your arsenal. Nothing wrong with that. You have a main character and you're comfortable playing with it, right? But once you've discovered heroes, you'll notice that they can use any of the skills previously unlocked on your account. This goes for PvP characters also. You can create a level 20 PvP character right off the bat and use any of the skills that you've unlocked on your account. So how this comes into play is you use your main character, let's say, for example, a monk, and you change your secondary to Mesmer. Now, when you go to the skill trainer, you can purchase any of the Mesmer skills that they offer and apply them to your account. Hence, heroes and PvP-only characters will get them also. You can also buy a signet of capture from these skill trainers, and then you can go out and capture the Mesmer elite skills from the Mesmer bosses. Even as a monk, you can do this because of your secondary. And then you just go down the line, changing your secondary to each other class, and then you repeat this whole procedure again. So, I hope this helps you all know a little bit more about the usefulness of having the right secondary class. For the longest time, I must admit, I had my secondary classes on most of my characters set as a monk, so that I could have the skill Rebirth. Okay, I'm pausing for a second here until you're done laughing. Okay, done? Okay, good. Yeah, that's a pretty noob move. And I realize that now. This was a long time ago. It was like, you know, last week. But I wasn't challenging myself enough with discovering what other secondaries can do. So I challenge you to switch up your secondaries a bit. You know, try out something that you were afraid to try before. You might actually find some interesting skill combos that can make you a much better player. You never know.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. Once again, I'd like to say I'm sorry for passing along inaccurate information to you about the continent of Ore. I have always prided myself in not saying anything here on the show as fact unless I knew that I'd heard it from a legitimate source. And in this case, it was from a legitimate source, but they apparently had no idea what they were talking about. So, I'm sorry if I got anyone's hopes up, because I know that I sure made the mistake of getting mine up, only to be bitterly, bitterly disappointed. Anyway, enough of that. It's been a while since I've had the opportunity to mention some names, so forgive me if it's been, like, 2 months and you haven't heard yours because I forgot you. Just shoot me a new email if your name got missed. Kiraj Moonrunner, RCM the Ranger, Koloth Kang, Maverick James, Kiragi Yagami, Onyx Sword Warrior, Amazon of Fire, Chipmunk Kitty, and Healer Lopo. Also, during the Eye of North preview, I had the distinct pleasure of getting to both party up with and talk extensively with Narsikin Grey, leader of the Circle of the Moon. You may not remember who he is, but as for me, I could never forget. Now, let's see. It's been quite a while since I've been able to tell you what I've been up to in-game. My fourth character hit 2 years old in July and got a garden gnome. I mean, a mini Paolo Ajoko. It looks like a garden gnome. I bought myself a baby Atax and made Loudon terribly, terribly jealous, which was awesome fun. Of course, one of his characters got a mini undead vizier boss dude for its birthday, so I was plenty jealous of that. And my guildie has got a mini Mandragore imp, and that's definitely next on my list to buy. They have this awesome dust trail that they leave in their wake, and it's, like, so funny. In August, I got my Connoisseur of Confectionaries title. Thank you to those of you who either gave me or sold me items. And although I did stand in TOA to take a screenshot of the announcement when I got the title, I still think that the new favor system is stupid. Logan Starlogic, who you've heard on the show before, asked me one day whether or not my character would end up with diabetes from having eaten so much sugar. Well, that was a very good question, so I did a little research and have come up with some information that might provide an answer. Eating that much sugar would indeed F up your system, with the pancreas working overtime to produce enough insulin, and you drinking blue sugar drinks at every meal and eating cupcakes over an extended period of time every time you visited DOA, certainly could, one would imagine, bring about type 2 diabetes. However, I found out a few more things. 1. Characters in Guild Wars don't get tired. You can run around as much as you want, and never will you slow down due to fatigue. You can be slowed by crippling or something similar, but that always wears off. Similarly, exhaustion is not lasting either. And although that does lower the amount of energy you have, it doesn't work in quite the same way as a person in real life when they lose energy. 2. Characters in Guild Wars do not age. At least, player characters don't age. It's like, you go up to Gwen, and you're like, "Oh my god, Gwen, you've grown so much! Last time I saw you, you were only this big!" And she's all like, "Funny, you look exactly the same as when I last saw you." 3. Characters in Guild Wars never get debilitating illnesses. Any condition that's put on you is temporary, even if you drink from that nasty chalice in Kainang. And even if you die from poison or disease or the like, you just get resurrected and you live to see another day. 4. Characters in Guild Wars do not need to breathe, eat, or sleep. You can sit down with your head underneath water for any length of time and your character does not die. You can play the game for as long as you like and never eat or drink anything, and it will not affect your character's performance at all. All of this evidence leads me to believe that a character in Guild Wars would never take ill from something like diabetes. They do not require sustenance, and thus would not have their digestion and various hormones affected, because they don't actually need those things in order to survive. So I hope this answers your question, Logan, and in my professional opinion, I believe that Sinea will never have to worry about diabetes, heart disease, or anything of the like. In our last episode, a listener, Dren M., asked about tips regarding selling items. Here's some things that I think about when selling. The first thing you want to do when you're selling something is to find out how much the item is worth. Then you can judge whether it is worth your time to try to sell it. For rare materials, dyes, runes, insignia, things like that, go to the trader that sells that item. Check out the buy price, and then check out the sell price to see what kind of range you're looking at. Then choose an amount somewhere in between those two numbers, and that's what you can sell the item for. For tomes, the normal ones will never sell for more than 1K. I usually try to buy them for about 500 gold each, and that's considered fair for both parties. The elite ones have some different prices, but not too long ago, most of them were about 10K. You can look them up and find out specifically how much yours is worth before you figure out whether you want to keep it or sell it. Green items, special gems and things like that, generally stay in a certain price range for a while, then they drop in price, and then they stay in a certain range, and then they drop. It usually doesn't go up for things like green items as time goes on. Usually they grow less expensive as like new items come in. There are some great guides on Guru where you can find prices for greens, item mods, the different rare skins, and they try to keep those lists as updated as possible when players contribute new information about the changing market. For gold items, the value of the item varies quite a bit. Some of the factors to consider are, 1. What is the rec on the item? Rec 9 or lower is usually worth the most. Rec 13 is pretty much worthless. 2. Is it inscribable? And if not, what is the inherent damage mod? Some are more sought after than others. Some are considered totally worthless. You can get an idea of what mods are valuable by looking at a price list for inscriptions. If you have a non-inscribable sword with a junk inherent mod, but it's got, say, a decent pommel on it, your best bet is to salvage off the pommel and then sell that separately. 3. What upgrades, if any, are on the item? This can add to the item's value. 4. And one of the most important things is it a rare skinned item? This is one of those things that will make a huge difference between two swords that have exactly the same stats, yet one costs 10k and the other costs 100k. Some players will pay exorbitant amounts for a specific skin. Now, as for me, I don't really care about item skins, although I have seen some cool new Eye of the North ones. But sometimes someone will say, like, "Hey, your Koss's sword is awesome!" And I'm like, "Huh? Oh, well, let me see. What is he wearing, you know?" But it pays to find out what's the latest and greatest that everyone wants right now, even if you personally don't care about the rare skin. Because, for instance, the last time that I had an item that I thought, that looks pretty decent, I bet I could get something out of this, I looked it up on Guru and I was like, whoa, people are paying through the nose for these things. So I threw the item up onto RPG Traders with a starting price of 50k, and it ended up selling for 80k. So it turned out to be well worth it to go look it up and find out that it was a rare skin. Which brings me to my next point. Sometimes it's difficult to find the perfect buyer in-game, just sitting and talking in the trade channel. I've used the RPG Traders website for selling, and I find that it works quite well. I've also heard good things about Guru Auctions. Everyone usually seems pretty cool about following through with the trades and making a point of trying to be online at the same time to make good on the deal, so I haven't had any complaints about those sites at all. It would be really nice to have some kind of system where you didn't have to be online at the same time, like you could mail the item to someone, but oh well. So once you've figured out how much you're going to ask for your item, then decide if you want to sell it in the trade channel or use some kind of outside website. I'll sell things like Ecto or Greens in-game, because they're usually pretty simple with fixed prices, and I'll use a site for golds and such. I find that it takes less time when you do it that way. I also find that you'll sell things faster if you name your price in your trade channel advertisement, rather than just saying PM offer. Otherwise, people will just be like, oh, well, we don't know how much you want for it. Sometimes selling gold items is way more work than it's worth. An alternative is to take all your gold items and then just sell them unidentified. Lots of people buy un-ID'd weapons, not only because they're going for titles, but also because it has the potential of having perhaps a very valuable upgrade on it. It probably won't, but it might. So you can pretty much always easily find buyers in-game for un-ID'd items. Well, I hope I've given you something to wrap your wits around. That'll be it for me today. This has been Lady Sinea bringing you The Word on the Street.
So that's it for yet another episode of Guildcast. I want to thank you all for listening and for the support for this podcast. Now, despite the fact that this episode is about a half of a week later than normal, or probably a little bit more than that, I must say that the whole PAX experience really motivated me to kick some more butt with the show and just keep it going as long as I can take it. So, if you'd like to reach me, I'm Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at guildcast.com, and Lady Sinea is LadySinea at gmail.com. That's LadySinaea at gmail.com. The website is guildcast.com, where you really should check out the forums and the wiki, if nothing else. Also check out virginworlds.com and browse around the other podcasts in Brent's podcast collective, including the newly revamped Ringcast for Lord of the Rings Online, with our very own Lady Sinéa and Cal Agram hosting now. My next episode I want to make kind of a surprise, mainly because I need to make sure everything will fall into place first, but you all should really be pleasantly entertained, I hope. So until then, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.